we are back with our second guest today. This is Deanna, and our guest for the second half of today's program is Stephen Williford, and his last name is spelled W-I-L-L-E-F-O-R-D, and his website is Stephen Williford, and Stephen is S-T-E-P-H-E-N. Stephen, welcome to the program. It's a delight to have you on.
Thanks for having me on. I also want to mention that I am sponsored by SecondAmendmentFoundation.org, SAF.org.
Okay. I will put that in our chat room. Anyway, you are a, well, you are a hero in my book and in other people's books as well. And tell us what exactly happened in 2017 that left 26 dead and 20 people injured in the First Baptist Church in Sutherland Springs, Texas.
Well, that morning I woke up and I decided that I wouldn't go to church that morning. I normally went to church about 35 miles away, but I was going to start an on-call at the hospital where I worked the very next day, and what that would mean would be I would carry a pager, and I would have to answer that pager 24/7 for the next week, and I knew I'd be putting in a lot of hours. So I decided I'd stay home and rest up. And that morning I was in my bedroom studying, and my daughter came in to the room. She was living with us at the time because she was engaged to be married, as she didn't want to sign another contract for an apartment and then get married and have two contracts. You know, she wanted to live with us and then be able to move in with her husband when she got married. So she was washing the dishes. That's part of what she was doing to be able to stay with us. We gave her chores. And she heard the shooting. And she came into my bedroom and said, "Dad, doesn't that sound like gunfire to you?" The mind right away tries to make something normal out of something that is very much abnormal. So I told her it sounded like someone was tapping at the window. And I went over and I opened up the curtain and looked outside. I didn't see anything. She said, "Come into the kitchen. It's louder there." And I walked into the kitchen, and the first thing I said is, "It's gunfire." And I ran to my safe to get my gun out. And my daughter ran out my front door, jumped in her car, and drove up the corner to see what was going on. I pulled my rifle out of my safe and grabbed a box of ammunition. I called my wife, and I said, "Where are you at?" She said, "I'm at Rachel's house," which was our other daughter. She said, "I'm taping and floating the walls." We were building a house for my other daughter, and we were doing all the work ourselves. And my wife was there taping and floating walls. I said, "Stay where you're at." And she could hear the panic in my voice. And she said, "What's going on?" I said, there's a shooter at the church." And she said, "Don't go over there." And I hung up on her. My older daughter ran into the room and said, "Dad, there's a guy in black tactical gear shooting up the church. And I saw him walking in the doors." And I said, "Did you call 911? She said, "I did. They're aware of it." So what that told me right away is police are on the way. But my community couldn't wait. We're a little bitty community under 600 population. And we're kind of out in the middle of nowhere. So I knew that sometimes police response could be a long time. So I started loading rounds into a magazine, started heading out the door, and my daughter followed me out the door. And I truly believe the Holy Spirit took over me at that moment, because I was thinking more clearly than I ever had in my life. And I turned and looked at her and I said, "You need to go back in the house and load me another magazine." I knew she couldn't load a magazine and come out during a gunfight and hand me a magazine. But I wanted to get her away from me. I gave her busy work, and that's what we call it. And so she ran back in the house, and I started across the street. And I was barefoot. I didn't take time to put shoes on. And as I ran across the street, I cried out. And what the shooter was doing is he would shoot someone, and then when they would go down, he would walk over point-blank range and finish them off. Oh. He had just shot Chris Workman in the back, instantly paralyzing Chris from the waist down. And then he shot Chris's mother through the breast, and he was walking over to finish him when I cried out. And Chris heard me. Some of the other people in the church heard me. And the shooter heard me, obviously, because he turned and he came straight out. He didn't take the extra 2 seconds to finish them off. And he came out, and he started shooting at me. He hit the truck in front of me, and he hit the car and shattered the windshield behind me. And he hit the house behind me. And I put bullets on him. I hit him in the left chest. I hit him in the abdomen, but he had on class 3 body armor. What class 3 body armor is most police departments carry class 2, which stop pistol bullets. Class 3 body armor is what the military uses, and it'll stop a rifle bullet. So when I hit him in the chest and I hit him in the abdomen, he felt it, but it didn't stop him. He kept coming at me. And at that moment, he kind of stopped shooting at me and started running for his vehicle. His vehicle was sitting in the middle of the street with the driver's side door open and the engine running. And as he turned to his side to get in, I saw my opportunity. And it has a front plate and a back plate to body armor, and it Velcroed across the side. And there's no body armor at the side. And I put one in his side, and I put one high in his legs. He was able to get into his vehicle, and when he shut the door, he put 2 more rounds through the side window. And I put one where I perceived his head to be. I couldn't see it because it was reflective. I couldn't see where his head was, and he had a SWAT helmet on, too, that was bulletproof. But the coroner's report said he had an abrasion across his forehead. He immediately accelerated, turned the corner, and started running away from me as fast as he could. By the time I ran out in the middle of the street, he was probably 150 yards away and accelerating fast. I put another bullet through the back window of the vehicle, and it shattered. And the police say that went through the back window, penetrated the driver's side seat, and hit him just right of the left shoulder blade. And then he just disappeared over the hill and kept driving. I was thinking, this can't end like this. This can't end like this. And I looked off to my left, and there was a pickup truck sitting there. And the truck had sat there and watched the whole shootout. And I ran over and I tapped on the window and said, "That guy just shot up the Baptist church. We have to stop him." And the doors came unlocked. I heard the locks open up. Any sane person in this world probably would have just accelerated and left me standing at the stop sign. But this is Texas we're talking about. We're not necessarily known for our sanity. So Johnny opened up the doors and I climbed in. I had never met him before in my life. And he just right away accelerated, just headed down the road chasing in the same direction. And he was on the phone with dispatch, and he was talking to, he had called 911, and since he was part of what was going on, they put him straight through to dispatch. And so he was telling them where we were and that we were chasing the shooter. I dropped the magazine and I looked, because I didn't know how many rounds I'd stuck in the rifle, nor did I know how many I had already shot. So I dropped the magazine, and I had one round in the top of the magazine and one in the chamber. I told Johnny, I said, tell them, hurry, hurry. I have two rounds left, and he still has on class 3 body armor. We were blasting down the road doing over 95 miles per hour. And Johnny just, he's a long, tall Texan with a big Western hat, tattoo of a longhorn skull on the middle of his neck, and the horns running up underneath his ears. Got a toothpick hanging out of his mouth. And just wasn't saying much to me. He was telling dispatch where we were and where we were going. And I had never met him. And some point we got to where we could see the SUV again. We were catching him. And I said, that's him. The windshield's gone. That's him. And I'm thinking, okay, my rounds must have had some effect on him because he's slowing down. And I'm thinking, this has got to be good, you know. And I looked at Johnny and I said, you know, if you catch him, you're going to have to put him off the road. And Johnny just looked at me like as if he was the calmest man in the world. He said, yep, I already figured that. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, who am I riding with? And Johnny's probably thinking, I always wanted to try a pit maneuver. As we came up on him, he pulled off into the bar ditch right in front of a curb sign and stopped. And as we pulled up, Johnny pulled up, stopped, still on the highway, but behind him a little bit. And I rolled down the passenger window and I stuck the rifle out the window and I opened the door. I was going to use the door as a shield. And as I was stepping out, before my foot hit the ground, the shooter accelerated. He hit the sign in front of him, flipped over the vehicle, and he ran right back up on the road and started running again. And Johnny started chasing him again, and I shut the door. He went about 3/4 of a mile farther up the road. This time he veered off to the left of the road and ran through a fence and out into a field. And I told Johnny, I said, just get down below the dash. Stay out of fire. And I got out and I put my rifle over the hood of Johnny's truck and started yelling at the guy, get out, get out. They estimated the police were 5 to 7 minutes behind me.
Oh.
And I sat there with my rifle over the hood of the truck between 5 to 7 minutes.
Oh, my gosh.
Thinking, where are the police? And finally, I heard an officer say, driver, get out of the vehicle with your hands up. And I looked off to my left, and I could see a police car. And the car was stopped, and the officer was standing behind the door with a pistol in his right hand and a microphone in his left. And he said it again. He said, driver, get out of your vehicle with your hands up. And I'm thinking, I don't want any mistakes here. Police are here.
Yeah.
So I laid my rifle on the hood of the truck, and I started back toward the back of the truck with my hands up. And the officer made eye contact with me and looked straight at me, and he keyed his bike again and said, not you. Okay. He knew who I was and showed me more respect at that moment than I ever expected. I ran back over. I picked my rifle up and I held it at the vehicle again until probably another 5 or 10 minutes more officers showed up. And this time they were pulling out rifles out of their car and I'm thinking I am done. And so this time I took the rifle, I laid it on the toolbox behind the cab of Johnny's truck and I was trying to keep my feet in the shade of the truck. It was 90 degrees that day, and I was barefoot, standing on hot pavement. And I guess I waited there probably about 30 to 45 minutes with them just blocking the roads and stuff. I started to run back to the police line, and they said, no, wait, we'll bring up a police cruiser. And they brought up a cruiser, and I was able to use it as a shield to get back to the police line. And then I figured out why they were waiting. They were waiting for a drone to fly over and look inside, and they found out that the shooter had killed himself. Later, we found out that he had called his wife and his father and told them that he had done something horrible and had been shot multiple times and wasn't going to survive, so he killed himself.
Wow. I'm feeling very tearful now. Just listening to your story.
What I really like to talk about is people like Julie Workman that I talked about earlier. She's the one that got shot through the breast, and her son was shot in the back and paralyzed. She's an emergency room nurse, and as soon as the shooter left, she got up and started tying tourniquets, saving lives within her church. Zach Poston's grandmother, Zach Poston, was a senior in high school. He was 17 years old, and he was signed up to be a Marine. And he got shot 7 times, and Zach's grandmother crawled on top of him to save his life, and she paid with her own life.
Oh, my gosh.
And died on top of Zach. Gunny Macias, and nobody seems to ever really recall Gunny's first name. They just call him Gunny. He's a retired Marine. And after the shooter left, Gunny started yelling out in a loud voice, "Hallelujah, hallelujah, even in this, praise God." And then started ordering people in within the church what to do, how to save themselves, and how to tie tourniquets and stuff. He went into Marine mode and started telling people. He had gotten shot 5 times in the abdomen. He couldn't even stand. But with his voice, he was doing what he could to save the people in the church. And then a little 7-year-old girl came up to Gunny and said, "Gunny, I'm scared." And Gunny started singing "Jesus Loves Me" with her. What a bunch of heroes in my church, in my community. Sutherland Springs is an amazing place to be.
I agree. You have to ask yourself why people would do this, why people would shoot strangers or in a church anywhere. It was just incredible that you live 100 yards from the front door of the church, and you immediately took action, which is thank goodness that you did what you did and didn't stop to think of your own life, but of the people that you had worshiped with probably all of your life. The fact that you would continue after this guy with the help of Johnny Langendorf, I that is just amazing that you thought about all of the potentiality that you thought about the time that it would take for police to arrive at your small community. And what a horrific story. And one must always ask, gosh, why would this person this killer do this?
The Bible says that there's evil in this world. I personally believe that that man had a demon within him, because I don't believe anyone could do the horrible things that he did without a demon in control. I don't believe humanity has the capability of doing what he did. And when I ran out, I said I believe the Holy Spirit cried out for me and called him out. In the Bible, it talks about when Jesus walked into the garden and there were two possessed men in the garden and they saw him, and the demons within them said, "We know who you are. Have you come here to torment us before our day?" And Jesus drove them out into the pigs. I believe that that was the same voice that called out the demon that was within him, because he immediately stopped what he was doing and came out to face me. I believe there's a spiritual battle in this world that goes on that isn't for human eyes to see. And sometimes we get a glimpse of it. And that day, I believe I was spoken to by the Holy Spirit. And I believe God called me out.
Oh, I must agree with you. I just, what a story. And he, so there was something wrong with his mind, obviously, that did, and you didn't know him before this, and did
no.
anybody at the church know him? Where did he live in relation?
He lived in New Braunfels, which is probably 40 miles away. His wife's mother and father and grandmother went to that church. And
to the
I
church
only,
that he shot up?
Yes. He shot and killed his wife's grandmother. He handcuffed her to the bed that morning so she couldn't move, and left her. And then before he started shooting the church, they say that he called his father and said, you need to go over and help my wife. She needs you. And so he sent his father over to unhandcuff his wife. He handcuffed her to the bed and then started preparing and dressing in his bulletproof gear and getting his guns together, and he left his wife handcuffed to the bed.
So this was obviously a plan. He didn't just snap and do this. This was a plan.
Well, and also he went to the First Baptist Church in Lavernia before he went to Sutherland Springs, and they had him on video sitting in the church in Lavernia, and there were two uniformed police officers in Lavernia. And they speculate that he saw them and thought better of doing it there, and drove to Sutherland Springs. Or maybe the speculation that he was going to start it there and then go to Sutherland Springs when the police responded to Lavernia.
Wow. And he must have planned this in advance. You don't just get up one morning and say, "Gosh, I think I'm going to go out and kill some people."
Either way, he had multiple loaded magazines and other guns in the vehicle.
Okay, so
said.
He had to have planned it at some point.
He dropped 15 30-round magazines in and around the church.
Gosh. Oh, now, you mentioned that you thought that he had evil spirits, and which obviously something was going on in his head. We are at the top of the hour. We will be right back. So stay with us, Stephen, and God bless you. We'll be right back. Thank you. Deanna. And our guest, the second half of today's program, is Stephen Williford. And his website is Stephen Williford. I'll post it in the chat room. And the other website of interest is saf.org, Second Amendment. He must have had this plan beforehand. Was he having marital difficulties? Was he on psych drugs? Was he?
He was on psychiatric drugs. He also had been in jail. He committed a felony for fracturing his young infant son's skull.
Oh my gosh!
He was trying to tell his son to shut up and stop crying. His son wouldn't, so he killed his son's dog in front of his son.
And then when his son
wouldn't stop crying, he slammed him down hard enough. He fractured his skull. He got a felony charge for cruelty to an animal for fracturing his son's skull, and the Air Force, he was in the Air Force, and they put him in a mental institution where he escaped from the mental institution, and then they gave him a dishonorable discharge. And the Air Force didn't enter any of this information into the instant background check system, the NICS system. They didn't enter any of it into the NICS system, which allowed him to go and purchase a gun legally because he wasn't in the system that would have stopped him.
And he was on psych drugs.
He was.
And why was that? Was he in the Middle East? What was he on psych drugs?
No, he had never been on the battlefield at all.
Wow.
He had never spent any time in any foreign country or anything. He was just, I believe he was possessed. I believe he had evil in him.
Now, do you know the psych drug that he was on?
No, I did not. I did at one time, but, you know, I really don't care to even talk that much about him.
Oh, I know. I'm so sorry.
What I would really rather talk about is my amazing community. People like Hank Fairness. Hank Fairness was the first police officer on the scene. Hank looks like he's almost 15 years old. He's actually in his 30s. He's just one of those guys that looks so young. And Hank had been buying trauma kits, tourniquets and things, and putting them in his car out of his own pocket. He had tourniquets. He had Stop the Bleed kits and first aid kits that he had paid for out of his own pocket because the police department doesn't pay for them. And some of the people said, Hank, why are you doing this? Are you expecting a mass shooting? And Hank would always tell him, you just never know. It's always better to be prepared. And that day, he was the first officer on the scene. He ran in ready to do battle. And then when he found out the shooter was gone, he went back out to his car and got his tourniquet kits and stuff and started passing them out and started tying tourniquets and saving lives in my community.
Oh, my gosh.
Before the EMS ever got there. And I want to talk about University Hospital, the very hospital that I worked for. That day, they were doing a drill, and they had all the nurses and doctors come in for the drill. And they were already there, and they were complaining, why are we here on a Sunday doing a drill? We've never had a drill on a Sunday before. Why are we here when we could be at church with our families instead? And then the call came out, and they were all hands on deck already at the hospital, and they got all 20 ORs up and running before the first victim ever showed up, because they were already there. And if you can't see God's hand in this, you're not looking.
Right. Oh, my gosh.
That day, there were 26 people died, 20 more were shot and injured, and only 7 walked out of the church without a bullet. And today, we have over 200 people at the church on any given Sunday.
Now, how many people were there all told that day? 26 dead, 20 were injured. How many were in attendance?
And
seven
more that weren't injured.
Wow.
So that's what, 52 people, 52, 53 people.
And what about the pastor of the church?
The pastor of the church was in Oklahoma, actually, and he was getting trained to be an instructor in black powder shooting so he could take the youth group on their summer camp. He could instruct them in black powder shooting. So he was in Oklahoma, and he lost his 14-year-old daughter in the church.
Oh my gosh.
And his wife was in Florida helping with some disaster relief in Florida when it happened.
Oh, my gosh. This is...
Holcomb family lost 8 members of their family that day.
How do people recover when they've lost that many people from their family? How? It just...
They recover with their faith, their strong faith in God. They know where those I talked to Joe Holcomb. Joe is the matriarch of the family. He's in his 80s. And I talked to Joe Holcomb, and I said, Joe, I'm so sorry for your loss. I said, I had no words. And Joe looked at me, he says, heck, I didn't lose anybody. He said, I'm an old man. He said, they just ran their race before me, and they're in heaven. He said, I'll see them soon.
Wow.
Joe's a man of faith and a man of God. And he knows where he's going when he passes from this world, and he knows his family's going to be there.
I know that that talking about the survivors and talking about the people who were so brutally murdered is important, but I just cannot understand the mindset of someone who would do such a dastardly thing. It's beyond me.
You can't explain evil. Evil's in this world, and evil does its deeds in this world. And the only thing I focus on God and God's plan for us all. God has a plan. God didn't cause this, but our church.
Oh, I don't think that he did, but.
But our church is reaching people in Africa. They're live streaming our church services in Africa, and we've been told that. God
really?
Has taken something so evil and so terrible, and we've gone from 50 normal on Sunday mornings to over 200 on Sunday mornings at our church service. And then people call from all over the world and say they're watching live streaming from Sutherland Springs, a little bitty community. They are watching our services in the morning.
Wow.
I personally go up and I speak, and I've spoke to churches all over the United States. They fly me in and I speak, and I help them get set up with a safety response teams and be ready, be more ready for evil when it comes. So the term is shortened. You can't stop evil from starting, but you can shorten the term of its reign. And now I speak to churches around this country and tell them what they need to be prepared for and what they need to do.
Well, I think that's very wise, because it seems that these killers are choosing to target places where they feel that they won't have any resistance, schools and churches and places where the attendees believe that they are safe, and
where they can inflict the maximum amount of damage.
Right.
Walmart in El Paso, where people were going to back to school shopping.
Right. I have to ask myself, what has society come to where people feel the need to go out and kill others? It's just beyond me.
Again,
it used to be.
It's evil.
Go ahead.
We as a nation have lost our way. We as a nation are okaying abortions of the most innocent.
Yes.
We devalue life. We make it even the most innocent among us are the babies that are unborn. And we devalue that life, and we say, well, it's just a mass of cells. And so we're okay with killing it, and it just keeps on progressing. And now they're saying even after birth, you know, if the child is on water, you know, the governor of Virginia just said, you know, even after birth, if they want, the parents and the doctor decide it's okay, we'll make the baby comfortable and let it die. You know, we cannot continue to go down this path where we don't value what God values and expect our country to be blessed.
Oh, you are so right. When they passed Roe v. Wade, I was horrified. And now
in Oregon and some of the other states, they have decided that it's okay for assisted suicide. You're elderly and, you know, we'll assist you in dying. So now we have devalued the innocent lives of unborn children. And now it's okay just to let the elderly just pass away. And we think we're okay with that. And so where does it end? When we stop valuing what God values, and then people see no value in life, in their own life or other people's lives, that's when evil comes in and says, nobody cares about you, and nobody cares about them either. We have to get back to what we were founded on as a nation, to be the greatest nation in the world. We have to get back to God. Start putting God back into the schools and start valuing life and understanding. I have a daughter that's pregnant, and I'll have my first grandson will be born in April, but he's already here. He's already here. He's already a valued member of our family. His name's Toby. And I can see baby Toby moving and my daughter, and I already love baby Toby. And I'm excited about holding my grandson. I have two beautiful granddaughters now. They're both under 2 years old. And Toby's just as much a part of my life now as they are. We have to stop devaluing life.
I totally agree with you. I just cannot fathom a person who would abort a child. And I, even under any circumstances whatsoever, because it's, even if that child is a product of say, rape or some vicious act, it's not the child's fault.
It's not the child's fault. The child has his own DNA, different
right.
from yours. The mother can't say, oh, it's my body, it's my choice. What about the child's choice?
Right.
The child didn't choose this. What about the child's choice? It's a life that has its own DNA. You made your choice before the child was conceived.
Exactly. If you're going to, a lot of people, I from what I understand, use abortion for birth control, which is the most horrendous, horrible thing. Just because something is legal doesn't make it moral or make it right.
And it shouldn't even be legal. Not in my book.
I don't think it should be either. I really don't.
You know, if your neighbor inconveniences you, you shouldn't be able to just go and end that life.
Exactly.
Just because you got pregnant and you're inconvenienced doesn't mean that that life should be ended because you're inconvenienced. There's plenty of people that would, there's plenty of people that would adopt that child, that would love that child. You need to make the adoption laws a whole lot easier than they are. Make it where you don't have to have a $10,000 to do an adoption. And then make abortion illegal. If you don't want that child, somebody would love that child. And who knows, that child may grow up someday and be president of the United States.
Well, the whole thing, Roe v. Wade, she didn't even have an abortion. She did,
but she regretted it.
Well, they used her. To get the law passed, I believe it was in Texas that they that this occurred, where they they recruited this woman, Norma, what's her last name, McCorvey, and it was just when it happened. I remember I was at church when I found out about it, and well, I wasn't at church. But right after that, I was in church, and I was talking about it to some of my friends, how terrible I thought that it was. And they didn't seem to think it was so terrible. And I thought, this is the worst thing that could possibly happen to a country where people won't take responsibility. If you're going to have unprotected sex, then you have to accept the consequences, and it shouldn't be murdering up your child to take care of something that you should have thought about before. And there are people who have grown up thinking that this is an okay thing to do, and I have interviewed people, women, who have had an abortion, and all of them have regrets. The ones that I interviewed,
they all regret it later.
Have regrets, yes. Yes, they do.
Except for some of the people in Hollywood that celebrate their abortion. You celebrating the death of your child that you caused, really, the moral compass, we have lost our moral compass. Time to get back.
Exactly. Yes. Our producer, who's very, very keen and observant, and he said ending abortions would have the effect of improving relationships and marriage for many multiple reasons. And if you don't value life, you're not going to value other people's lives, like the life of your husband or anybody. If you can devalue a child, an infant, a helpless infant
who is unborn child that has no sin.
Right. Then that says something about you as an individual who views life as not worth anything. I also do not believe in capital punishment, because there have been a lot of people who have been executed and because they may have been in the wrong place, wrong time, and people have been convicted of crimes that they didn't commit, and current DNA samples and things like that have proven that many people who have spent years in jail were not guilty of the crime that they were convicted for. So I think that you even have to look at capital punishment. You have to look at life in general.
I think it should be rare, but I think on those occasions where there's no doubt, I think it should be.
Oh, like the killer in this, there's no doubt that person destroyed all of these lives. Absolutely. But if, I think it should be used very, very rarely. And, of course, this goes into so many things. You have to look at the family unit, what has happened to the family unit in our society. You have to look at the privatization of prisons. There are so many things that you can look at that speak to the issue that you've brought up, the devaluation of life, where people are imprisoned and there's a lot of a lack of integrity that goes along with what you're talking about. A lack of integrity, a lack of respect for life, a lack of respect for the law, for just doing the right thing, choosing the right thing. After this happened, how are you doing? Are you okay?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. I ask people to pray for me for peace. And for humility, some people try to make me more than what I am. All I am is a tool of God. And so I ask for prayers for peace and humility. But because I'm not the Euro God, God is the planner of this whole thing. God planned for me to go over and to save them. It's his story. It's not mine.
I believe you. I believe you were in the right place at the right time and that you were willing to do this. A lot of people wouldn't be willing to do what you did. Okay, so.
Well, you know,
so,
when God calls, you answer that call. And they said, yeah, but you could tell God no. Well, I don't want to be in the belly of a fish. I know that story.
Right.
So you answer the call, and you answer yes when God calls to do his will.
But the fact that you were open to listen, that says something about you. And
well,
whether you...
As a Christian, understand, I couldn't lose that battle. Because if he would have shot and killed me, I would have woke up in the arms of Jesus. And that ain't a bad day either.
Well, that's true. That's true. But it still took courage for you to go in and do what you did, whether God called you or not. You answered and you said yes, and you didn't know exactly what you were facing. You knew something terrible was going on, and you listened, and you did what you were called to do, and you saved a lot of people. The story doesn't end, as you've indicated. The story continues to grow. The influence, because of what you did, will help others to have a different feeling, have a different respect. You say that people are watching the live cast of what's going on in church. That says a lot of people really respect what you did. Even though you were answering the call of God, you could have said no, okay, but you didn't. You did something that a lot of people would have stepped away from. You didn't wait for the police to get there. You took action. You were there. Barefoot or not, you were there. You answered the call. And it saved a lot of people. And Johnny, you recruited Johnny. Did you know Johnny before?
No, I had never met Johnny before that day. Johnny's a good man. He just did what he was called to do, just as I did.
Exactly. And how is it that he was nearby? He was just at a stop sign his truck.
He was driving to see his girlfriend that morning.
Exactly. And a lot of people would not have done what he did. So between the two of you, you were positioned in the right, at the right time, in the right place to do what needed to be done, and you accepted your call. And I do believe that you were called to do what you did.
I believe it also.
And as you were telling the story, I was tearing up, because I cannot imagine the trauma and that what was going on. I just it was just hearing about it was traumatic to me. And so what about the stricter gun laws? Would that prevent?
What's that?
What do you have to say to people who believe that stricter gun laws would prevent mass shootings? Do you think that people should just turn in their guns and say, oh, we don't need these anymore?
No, I think evil finds a way. Evil always finds a way. Look across the border. See how many illegal guns are in the hands of drug cartels and stuff. Drug cartels, they say, have a $500 billion budget. And at a $500 billion budget, even if they couldn't get guns on the black market, they could set up a manufacturing plant and manufacture them themselves. Evil will always find a way. Criminals will always find a gun. The difference is there's more good guys out there than there are evil.
Thank goodness.
We have to step up and take charge. The more guns in good guys' hands, the better off we are.
Alrighty, we're going to a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back. With you and me, have to teach the children about living with each other, because the future will soon be in their hands. Watching us close.
then follow our steps. If we do right, I'm sure they'll understand.
All righty. We are back. I wanted to play more of that music today to honor you because you were there when you needed to be. And anyway, our guest the second half of today's program is Stephen Williford, and his websites are, I'll post them in the chat room, but Stephen Williford, that's WILLEFORD, and Stephen is spelled STEPHEN, and the other website is SAF, which is a Second Amendment
Foundation.
Foundation.org. Sorry, I had a brain freeze there. So I understand what you were saying, that you can always find guns. Chicago has some of the toughest gun laws in the country, and yet we have the more shootings than probably any community in the country.
This is really interesting, because I just spoke in Virginia at a pro-gun rally. They estimate that there was 100,000 people there, and most of them had their own guns with them. And there was no crime in the streets of Virginia. In fact, when the rally was over, the guys that carried the guns and came to the rally, they broke out trash bags and stuff, replaced trash bags in the city trash cans with empty ones, and hauled the old ones off, swept the streets, picked up, and cleaned up. And at the same time, there was no crime in Virginia, in Richmond, Virginia streets. None, zero. Nobody would have done a crime with that many guns around. There was no crime there.
Sure.
And at the same time, six people were murdered in Chicago.
Exactly.
Where guns are illegal. Now tell me what the difference is. Why did people get murdered in Chicago at the same time that Virginia was having a gun rally and they had no crime on the street? If guns are the problem, you would know it.
You're right. Absolutely. Now, do you believe that churches should be armed so that they can...
At all time.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the church shooting, the recent church shooting that happened in White Settlement, Texas, at a Church of Christ. It was stopped in 6 seconds by a well-trained man who was a volunteer. He wasn't an officer. He was there to watch over his church. The shooter killed two of his friends, and he shot and killed him within 6 seconds, saving countless lives in his church. His name's Jack Wilson. Everybody should know that name. Jack Wilson is the man. No one should know the shooter's name. No one should know the murderer's name. But Jack Wilson's name, everybody should know.
Right. And this just happened.
Multiple lives.
Recently.
Huh?
And this just happened recently.
Like a month ago.
Right. Wow. I grew up around people who had guns. Everybody in my family had a gun. It was just common. And I remember in high school that people would, if they had a pickup truck, they often had their gun on the back. You know, it was just a normal kind of a thing. And nobody shot anybody. It was just normal. I used to go skeet shooting, and my dad went hunting, and my aunt and uncle, and it was just normal behavior that we had guns, and that we never shot anybody. Of course, we went hunting and skeet shooting. It was just a thing to do.
Competition, it's better than golfing.
I think so, sure. And
and it has a practical purpose in life.
Golfing
doesn't.
Absolutely. In this day and age, with the violence that we are confronted with the violence on TV, and I think that you have to look at television, at the programming that people have been programmed, where there's so much violence on television, which I think is a bad thing, because children who are impressionable, well, everybody's impressionable, but there's so much violence that it contributes to this lack of respect for life in general. Would you agree with that?
That's what I've been saying. That's where it comes from.
Yes. And I really, it, when my children were young, we didn't, there was no such thing as violent TV. It was just family programs and, it was just families. But now you have all this murder and mayhem and sex and violence and a lack of respect for life, as you indicated. And it all speaks to that is the diminishing respect for life in general, which obviously contributes to what we see going on. Did you ever decide that? Oh, really? Oh, okay. We lost our guest, and I was rattling on about the violence on TV, and I think that all contributes to the general disrespect that we see in people. People have no respect for life. And I mean the life of everything. The life of the animals that we share the planet with. The life of everything. I think that, like Tony was talking about in the first part of the program, that they're destroying forests and destroying the environment. Hi, we must have lost you.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
I'm going through an area where I don't have good coverage, right?
Oh, okay. We were talking about the violence on TV, and that it really does.
You know,
go ahead.
I mean, I don't think it's violence on TV. When I grew up, Yosemite Sam and the cartoons had violence in it. Everything else had violence, you know, and we were okay. And I'm not saying that, you know, I do think that there should be a lot less violence on TV and stuff. But the violent video games where you get points for shooting people and things, that's, you know.
Video games are very dangerous. I
think they desensitize, and my son would disagree with me. Okay.
Yeah, I've done some programs recently on technology and on video games and games where children, younger people get addicted, and it's really not good for children to be addicted to technology and
Hello?
To these games.
Hello?
But it's...
Hello?
Yes. Yes. We're
Hello?
Here. Okay. We'll take some phone calls if you'd like to call into the program is 800-313-9443. Okay. We have Chance in West Virginia. Chance?
Yes. Hello, Deanna. Hello, Mr. Williford. God bless you. Mr. Williford, I'd like to make a comment. I think you might agree with this. Evil has always been present in this world. It's just more rampant now because I believe where Bible prophecy is being fulfilled. This is why we're seeing so much of it now. Would you agree with that statement?
I would agree with it. When we start calling what's good evil and what's evil good, that's a prophecy from Revelation.
Yes, it is.
When you can talk about, you know, women that celebrate their abortions, that's definitely when we're calling what is evil good. And you know, we've just gone down those paths. And
yes, sir. And I believe God is calling all this to our attention. It's time for us to not sit on the fence any longer and to pray.
Absolutely.
Yes, sir.
That it's time to turn back to God. We can walk away from God, and that's what we're doing. With taking God out of school and everything else, we're walking away from God. God will never walk away and leave us, but we can leave him. But when we do, we suffer the consequences of what we have asked for.
Yes, and it's only going to become more rampant until people totally surrender to God and pray. This is our test. This is our test at this point. These tragic, horrible things will continue more and more, and we're seeing it throughout the whole spectrum, political, socially, on every level. What could be more evident? If only people realize, if they don't turn to God soon, it's only going to get worse. Thank you for letting me speak, Mr. Williford. Thank you, Deanna. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye, Chance. Thank you for calling into the program. Yes, you have many people, absolutely many people who agree with what you did. We'll take some more phone calls. We've lost him again. He's in an area where the reception is not so great, so our wonderful producer will call him back. Now, Stephen Williford grew up in Sutherland Springs, Texas. He was raised in a family of five on a dairy farm near the First Baptist Church, and he's the fourth generation to live on a few hundred acres of land in Wilson County. And he always relied on his faith to guide his life. And his roots in Sutherland Springs are the product of his family's commitment to their community. He was always an avid sports person, and he began shooting at a young age. And he honed his shooting skills by participating in shooting competitions when he got older. And he also made sure that his three children were trained in gun safety, passing along his expertise. And I believe that's what we should do. If we know something and would like to share it, we should share it. In 2013, even though I had been around guns a lot, had practiced, had shot a lot, I took an NRA class, and it was specific to having a safe home. It was to set up a safe home where I could protect myself within my home. And I think that's what you need to do. You need to be able to protect yourself and not give up your guns. Because, well, it's the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment was kind of designed to protect the First Amendment. And so I think that that Stephen did a really terrific thing. I know that he doesn't want to be looked at as a hero, but I really believe that that he was a hero. He did what a hero did without thinking about it. And he actually delivered a speech at the National Rifle Association Convention in May 2018. And he's also the honored guest of members of the Texas delegation at the 2018 State of the Union Address in Washington, D.C. His profession is a plumber, and he earned his license from the Plumbers and Pipefitters Apprenticeship School in San Antonio, and has been a plumber for 35 years in his field of expertise. And Governor Greg Abbott in 2018 appointed Stephen to serve on the Texas Private Security Board. He's also a member of the National Rifle Association, the NRA, and he's also a certified instructor and former assistant scoutmaster with the Boy Scouts of America. And he's been married for 30 years and has 3 children and 3 grandchildren. Now, did we get him back yet? Okay, so we can... Okay. So we apparently can't get him back. He's in a space that doesn't have coverage. Texas is a pretty big place. Anyway, we will take some phone calls if you'd like to contribute some your thoughts. And of course, our telephone number is 800-313-9443. Now, the Second Amendment Foundation, SAF.org, is the nation's oldest and largest tax-exempt education, research, publishing, and legal action group focusing on the constitutional right and heritage to privately own and possess firearms. They were founded in 1974, and there are 650,000 members and supporters, and they conduct a lot of programs designed to better inform the public about the consequences of gun control. And I will post something in the chat room about Stephen and about what he did. And I know there were a lot of comments in the chat room. And I always think, or I don't always think, but often when these shootings occur, and they're certainly occur on a frequent basis, I always ask, why? I always like to know why something happened. It's just very difficult for people who value life to try to understand what would cause a person to go out and shoot another person. And I shoot them or stab them or we all have, we can all become angry. And I believe that anger is probably one of the worst emotions that people can have. When people are angry, they often, get sick. They get physically ill. Anger causes more illness, I believe, than a lot of other emotions. If you're angry, you're going to affect your entire body. It will affect every organ in your body. It may cause you to have mental issues, of course, in addition to the mental issues that would cause people to go out and kill others. When you're angry, you do things that you wouldn't otherwise do. But to be angry enough to take another person's life, is just beyond me why that would occur. And there are people who actually plan it. And this person who committed these crimes obviously, had thought about it, had planned it, and, was he angry at his family? Was he angry? And we can speculate about why he was angry. And, did he have marital issues? And to kill anything is just, something I just don't understand. Just do not understand. And, I was going to ask him, and I believe I did ask him, whether, all churches should be armed. And I believe that that they should be. And I believe that other, vulnerable buildings, institutions should also have people who are armed, because, people who shoot others typically don't have a lot of courage. They believe that the gun gives them the courage to do what they are intending to do. And, so they are going to choose a store or a church or a school where they know that there are vulnerable people, vulnerable children, vulnerable elderly people. They are choosing these types of situations, of places where they can go in and vent their anger upon innocent people or vent whatever psychiatric drugs they happen to be on. And I think too, that psychiatric drugs are not the only situation that we're looking at. As I mentioned, we talked to people earlier. I've interviewed people recently about violence in video games, that it desensitizes people, that it makes you seem invincible. It also dehumanizes your sensitivities. And when you look at the organization, the companies in conjunction with the government who create these games, and the government does have a hand in it. When you look at who created these games, you have to wonder, what the heck were they thinking? Is this something that is deliberate? And I think that you could say yes, a big yes, because now, and getting back to the Middle East and getting back to what we talked about earlier with directed energy and whatnot, with directed energy or shooting, from an airplane or whatever. Okay, we're going to a quick break. We'll be right back. Oh, we're done. Gosh, I could have talked a little bit longer. Bless you for listening today. Thank you so much. And we'll talk next week. Thank you. Have a beautiful, beautiful week. Bye-bye.